got bad. Now the boat won't float. I don't like it. I'm too proud to be born. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the August 22nd edition of the World Labor Hour here on WEFT in Champaign. We broadcast 90.1 on the FM dial, and you can catch our stream through weft.org. And we should also mention that new public affairs page up there on the WEFT website, and we've got archives of most of the recent last 3 or 4 months worth of World Labor Hour shows up there, as well as some of the other public affairs shows here at WEFT, including like Disability Beat, some of the Higher Grounds, Smile Politely Radio and stuff, so you can check out our archives up there on our website. And as always, the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associates, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
And now by the way, Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, in case people were wondering about those shows you mentioned.
Yeah.
Disability Beat is about disability issues.
Right.
Probably pretty obviously. Yep. And Smile Politely Radio. What's like local, cultural
things. Entertainment, food, movies, music, all kinds of great different
pretty
information.
Good show.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
Friday.
Yeah. You know, both of them locally produced.
Right, right. Yeah, so, good stuff.
Send us some money.
There you go. We are going into pledge drive.
You can do
drive.
That at the, website pretty easily.
As well,
right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
cool.
Fairly easily. Yeah, and we are going into pledge drive soon, but we'll talk more about that when we get there. Now here's Gus with some of our underwriting.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois' Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois' Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjobswithjustice.org. This programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice, both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
All right. Thanks, Gus. We got a jam-packed show for you today, folks. We're going to have some news stories, some commentary. And we got a couple guests here from our local Ask Me Local at the U of I, and so we're going to get to them here in just a few minutes and start off with a couple news stories. Gus, you got something you want to start off with?
Like you say, packed show today, so glad to have Ask Me in here showing solidarity with the community radio. Also going to do a major thing on the Stephen Salida and Chancellor Wise case. A lot of people have been asking about that later on. But first, we're going to start off with some things that have been going on recently in terms of more police violence going on in St. Louis.
Yeah.
There was a brutal police crackdown of a peaceful gathering of roughly 100 people near the site of the police murder of black 18-year-old Mansur Balbay in a residential suburb of North St. Louis has once again brought to the surface the underlying drive toward a police state rule in the United States. In the recent period, the First Amendment guarantee of the right of the people to peaceably assemble has been steadily stripped of its meaning, along with other democratic rights spelled out in this so-called Constitution. Protesters first gathered Wednesday afternoon as news spread that Balbay had been killed by police. At the time, many were commemorating the life of another young individual, a 25-year-old black man who was killed by police exactly a year before, less than 5 miles from the house where police had killed Ball Bay. When they heard the news, some in the crowd went to the site of the shooting of Ball Bay. As the crowd gathered, St. Louis police responded immediately by calling for reinforcements, which included a SWAT team of roughly a dozen officers, which arrived in mine-resistant ambush protected, or the MRAP tank,
wow,
donning full body armor, helmets, and assault rifles.
Wow.
Dozens of other officers also arrived as backup so that the police presence roughly matched the size of a small crowd of demonstrators and bystanders. Over the course of the day, police arrested 9 people on charges of impeding traffic and resisting arrest. After initially firing smoke canisters at the protesters, police soon unleashed a hail of tear gas on the demonstrators. And there is video for anybody listening that wants to watch that has surfaced showing the military style methods used by police in suppressing these protesters. So again, another instance where an individual has been killed by police, and this wasn't in rebellion mode.
Right.
These weren't people that actually were actively holding a political movement to challenge the system. They were just peacefully protesting and acknowledging the fact that this man had been killed, and they were still tear gassed. They were still attacked by police, and they were still, you know, I mean, this is becoming a situation where all forms of, and we're going back in history into the 1800s when you had any African Americans that got together, it was looked upon as being dangerous to the community, dangerous to the country, because all they were doing was just standing there. They weren't even doing anything in terms of rebellion, tactics, and they were still being attacked. So now it's at the point where we cannot get together as a group without something happening with the police or some other type of repression tactic by the state.
Actually, in several cities, they even have ordinances like that. You know, there's supposed to be anti-gang, you know, activity. That's been common for quite some time. I don't know if that's ever been challenged in the courts or...
I don't know.
I can't remember any specifics, right, but I just remember reading about laws like that. I got something on a little bit lighter note.
Okay. Yeah, let's hear it, Bill.
All right. Well, Jesse Ventura writes this. Okay. Bernie's definitely got momentum. The question is, can Bernie keep it going for another year and a half and take the Democratic nomination from those lining Hillary's pockets? It's possible Bernie could win all elections and still not get the nomination from the Democratic Party because technically he's still an independent. Anyway, what it is Jesse Ventura says he's going to support Bernie Sanders any way he can. Which is a pretty wide swing from supporting Ron Paul in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
But,
interesting. Actually, last week we had a kind of a story about some of the unions coming out in support of Hillary before the primary and stuff, you know. And Gus and I were talking before the show about how some of the union workers are kind of upset with the leadership coming out in support of Hillary and saying that they would prefer the unions to support Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, there's been a major drive by a lot of locals who have signed petitions demanding the AFT to rescind their endorsement of Hillary Clinton. They claim that it was too early, first of all, because they're going to do an endorsement. It should be after a primary.
Yeah.
And then they also said that there are a lot of policies that are very contradictory in what Hillary's presenting as a campaign package that, you know, that we refuse to accept. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future in terms of what the AFT is going to do, because as of now, I haven't heard any response by the AFT to these demanding calls, and that's nationwide.
Right.
So, yeah.
I know the Machinists came out at the end of this week too, questioning their leadership supporting Hillary this early.
Mm-hmm.
And they evidently took a poll of about 1,700 workers, and there's like 500,000 of them across the country.
Exactly.
So that the people are saying it's too early to come in for Hillary. They should be supporting Bernie Sanders. They hardly took 1%, less than 1% of the members to find out whether they should support Hillary or Bernie.
And of course, like I said, that's one of the biggest issues that's always been a problem in labor in American history, is this fact that there is no mandate to centralize the workers' perspective when you're moving forward. You know, you have these people who would try to do this representative mode where I think I can give them what they need instead of asking the workers, what exactly do you want? And you can see this in doing a comparative like thing with South African labor unions. They had a workers' perspective that if anybody went outside of what the workers wanted, they were instantly removed from their office position, no matter what. They were no longer representative of the union. So now we have these representatives, and we don't know what AFT did to all of a sudden think that they can make this endorsement. But I promise you this, I still don't know why people think that she is a friend of labor, Hillary Clinton. I haven't seen anything. No, remember, like I said, she may say things, but her track record does not show any type of support for workers at any level. And I'm still waiting to see that. So this endorsement comes really out of the blue sky.
Well, here's what Ventura says here. I think that what Bernie Sanders doing is extremely healthy. I love the idea of somebody throwing a fly in the ointment. I'm sick and tired of the handpicked two candidates. It makes us look like we shouldn't even have fought the Revolutionary War because we still believe in kings and queens here. Hats off to Bernie Sanders. I'll help him any way I can, although I'm not quite as socialistic. Bernie believes in power to the people and people controlling the government, and I believe in that also. So I hope Bernie's successful, and I wish him well the whole way. It will be interesting to watch it happen. Mm-hmm. And actually, about a week ago, there was a fake thing come out about Ventura saying he wanted to be Trump's vice president.
Oh, really?
So obviously that wasn't true after seeing this. Basically, I don't really see the thing about Hillary Clinton right now, and I'm not going to say just Hillary. I might say Mrs. Clinton, former Senator Clinton, so on and so forth, but I'm not, you know, this isn't pop music. Okay.
Right. Right.
And I'm not going to say Bernie either unless I'm directly quoting somebody.
Okay.
But anyway, and now I've lost what I was going to say. There's a lot of grand lack of democracy in almost all the unions in the United States.
We've talked about that for years on this program about top-down leadership of many of the unions and stuff and how they don't talk to their workers and stuff, and they're really just representing the executive portion of it. SEIU was noted for top-down leadership for many years, you know. So.
Yes. Well, I do have another presidential story, and this is by Kimberly Pearsall of the Associated Press. Housekeepers, cooks, and bartenders rallied outside Donald Trump's hotel to draw attention to their efforts to unionize workers at the property just off the Las Vegas Strip. To the beat of drummers and under the watchful eye of Metro Police, culinary union members and others began a short march Friday from Las Vegas Boulevard to the Trump International Hotel, Las Vegas, where they say they are rallying because the hotel has blocked efforts to organize its workforce. In a statement announcing the protest, the union said there are 500 Trump employees who are seeking to unionize and pointed at the slogan of the company's namesake's bid for the GOP nomination. Quote, Donald Trump says he wants to make America great again, said Giaconda Aguello Klein, a culinary union officer. He further went on to say, Mr. Trump should start right here in Las Vegas with workers at this hotel. Trump's political campaign referred questions about the labor union rally to the Trump Organization in New York. Eric Trump, the company's executive vice president of development and acquisitions and a son of Donald, said claims the unionizing workers have been harassed or intimidated were untrue. He added that the workers, several hundred employees, have been happy on the plantation. Oh, I mean, no, sorry.
There you go.
Have been happy, saying it's likely that the hotel hadn't unionized since opening, likely why the hotel hadn't unionized since opening in 2008. Oh, gee, a whole 7 years. Yeah, you take that 7 years, they've got a little bit of irritation. Seven-year itch.
Yep.
That's what we can call it, the seven-year itch to organize.
Mm. Well, let me talk about some more happy workers then. This week, the New York Times came out with an article about Amazon and how they treat their executives there.
Well, I heard something about that. And also, but there's been earlier articles, I believe Mother Jones, possibly The Nation, on how their warehouse workers
We've reported
treated.
On their yes, warehouse yes, workers here before, and
but
there's
I,
been...
Let me get one thing in here.
Okay.
These happy workers here, of 13 complaints filed with the National Labor Relations Board against Trump's Vegas operations since 2014, that sounds pretty happy, four with withdrawn and two were informally settled.
Hmm.
Those who remain open allege the hotel tried to coerce employees not to join, retaliated against them, and in one case fired an employee. Details of the allegations were not available on the labor board's website. So that's Trump doesn't look friendly to labor here.
No.
But he's just got that way of talking, you know.
Yep. So this New York Times article written by Jody Cantor and David Streitfeld said that Amazon, quote, is conducting a little-known experiment in how far it can push white-collar workers. They interviewed more than 100 current and former Amazonians, as the employees refer to themselves, and it reveals a punishing workplace culture at the retailer's Seattle headquarters. Underperformers are nixed in annual cullings they describe as purposeful Darwinism. Employees are instructed to rip into colleagues' ideas, both in person and behind their backs, by anonymously complaining to co-workers' bosses. 80-hour work weeks are the norm, and no excuses are tolerated for poor performance. A woman who had thyroid cancer was given a low performance rating on her return and told by a manager that while she was out, her peers were accomplishing a great deal. Breakdowns are common. Here's a quote from one of the people that was interviewed. He said, "Nearly every person I work with, I saw cry at their desks. Attrition is high. The medium employee tenure is only 1 year. That's among the briefest in the Fortune 500. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos comes out, said in the company-wide memo that he didn't recognize the soulless dystopian workplace that was described in the Amazon or in the Times story. Like I say, Amazon workers are encouraged to tear apart one another's ideas in meetings. They toil long and late. Emails arrive past midnight, and then they're followed up by text messages asking why they're not being answered. And it holds them to standards that the company itself boasts are unreasonably high. And as Bill pointed out, you know, this is the executive portion of it, and we've been reporting on how Amazon treats its warehouse workers for several years here. Germany, they've been threatening strikes over there and have had some small strikes against the Amazon warehouses there. Well, so it sounds like the total company here is just abusive to their workers.
Well, oh, you know.
Yeah. By the way, yesterday I was streaming WCPT while I was at work at this electric substation. And anyway, this Wayne Besson is the name of this guy's show, and he's a local guy, so he also talks about Illinois stuff. But he was discussing this on there too, and he was describing how they had mechanisms set up for people to sort of go behind each other's backs and complain to management, and that was greatly encouraged. And they were setting workers off against each other, and some workers were combining together to get other workers fired in this atmosphere. I mean, it was like a reality show or something.
Right. Just stab each other in the back. And
oh, it sounded terrible. And
they apparently have email templates that you can fill in to just complain about other workers and stuff like that.
And tell you what, Jeff Bezos, you know, he's a big libertarian.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed, I've worked for over a dozen companies within a year's time.
Right.
And I noticed that the company culture and the people I work with, the fish rots from the head down.
Yeah.
Because the person who is at the head of that company is the person who hires, you know, the management and all that, and it's going to be reflected all the way through. Some construction companies I work for, I love all the people I work with. The work's really bad maybe, but the people are great. Other ones, it's just awful. And that's the way it is here. This Bezos is setting this up. Yep. One way or another, he is sending a message through his management that this is what he wants.
Right, right. You got another quick story there, Gus, or we could go to a musical break, and we'll be back then in just a few minutes with our guests. Here's a early version of 16 Tons. Maybe not. How about if we do this one here?
You load 16 tons, and what do you get? You get another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Yes, sir, there's a menu, a Kentucky coal miner that pert near owes his soul to the company store. He gets so far in debt to the coal company he's working for that he goes on sometimes for years without being paid one red cent in real honest-to-goodness money. But he can always go to the company store and draw flickers or scrip. You know, that's little brass coins that you can't spend nowhere only at the company store. So they add that against his account, and every day he gets a little farther in debt. That sounds pretty bad, but even that's got a brighter side to it. Now some people say a man's made out of mud, but a poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood, skin and bones, a mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Well, I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mines. Loaded 16 tons of the number 9 coal. And the straw boss, I hollered, well, bless my soul. 16 tons. And what do you get? You get another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Well, I was born one morning, it was drizzling rain. Fighting and trouble is my middle name. I was raised in the bottoms by Mama Hound. I'm mean as a dog, but I'm as gentle as a lamb. I load 16 tons, and what do you get? You get another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Well, if you see me coming, you better step aside. A lot of men didn't, and a lot of men died. I got a fist of iron and a fist of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. You load 16 tons, and what do you get? You get another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
All right, we're back here. That was Merle Travis, I believe, from 1947, doing an early version of 16 Tons. And we're back here on the World Labor Hour on WEFT in Champaign. And we have two guests in the studios with us here from Ask Me Local on campus here. You want to introduce yourselves?
I'm Ann Zetterval. I'm president of Ask Me Local 3700 on campus, and I work over in aerospace engineering as office support.
Wonderful.
And I'm Nadia Robot. I'm the vice president. I work for student affairs at La Casa, the Latino Cultural Center.
All right. Wonderful. And you folks are kind of representing ASME and says you're kind of turning over some new leaves and heading in some new directions here. Got some exciting new programs you're starting. And
yeah, we've been working a lot to build membership on campus. We're both fairly newly elected, and we're working really hard to make sure that our union does have a presence across campus and in the state, since we cover the university extension workers statewide as well.
Ah, and you were saying there's quite a few of those extension offices?
Yeah, there are over 100 of the extension offices all over the state. So one thing that we are trying to do is increase our MAT structure. It's the Member Action Team. Since we're so spread out on campus, there are over 200 buildings, I think. We're trying to get representatives. Our goal would be to have one representative in each building, but that's pretty lofty. So we're sort of carving the campus up into areas and making sure that we've got some coverage in every section on campus so that we can disseminate information to the workers.
And get workers' feedback about their concerns. Yes, yes. As opposed to the top-down unions we were talking about just a few minutes ago.
Right. That's one thing that's really good about AFSCME in general, is they are less of the top-down approach. The members really do have a voice all the way up through the international.
Wonderful. Yeah, yeah. And so what programs are you starting besides this MAT program? And
one thing that we really want to do, and it's great that Gus is here because we've worked with him a little bit and we hope to do it way more, is get a network of all of our local unions on campus together. There's another AFSCME local, Local 698, who do more of the technical work. We want to start working with them a lot more, with the GEO, with SEIU, and with some of the other laborers who are on campus.
Even trade unions often have small representatives on campus that still negotiate with the university, even though they are not necessarily direct employees of the university.
Well, the laborers union, my local, has several bargaining units, maybe a few bargaining units on campus, such as grounds workers, the some people out at the airport. I'm not really sure what they do. I believe the mail handlers, and that's besides the actual construction laborers who are there, who always get upset when we vote to put our raise in the pension because they're on the state pension instead of ours.
I believe that.
Yeah, so the building trades are definitely represented there. And from what I understand, I hear of them giving quite a bit of support to other unions there, which kind of surprises me. But.
And I believe the adjunct professors were recently recognized as a union on campus, and
yes,
they've got some new leadership as well.
And that's one group that we are working on reaching out to have a better relationship with, since we're all working to negotiate with the university right now.
Yeah.
For our contracts. Yeah, I think a lot of people are in negotiations right now. I know 698 is, we are, and some of the trades are, I know. They just started negotiations with the university. We actually just started mediation because we've been negotiating for over a year and have yet to agree on much. So we just have a mediator brought in just this week. Did we negotiate?
Yes. Have you been working without a contract for all that while or on the old contract?
Our contract actually expired August 30th, 2014. So we have been working without a contract since then, although the previous contract does remain in force until we have a new one.
So what do you think about the Reichsführer vetoing this recent bill that came out that would ban strikes and lockouts and cause the state to go into arbitration?
We feel very positively. It's something that AFSCME is really, really backing.
Yeah, and just to be clear, that does not include university workers. That's only direct state.
I didn't understand that. So the university is considered like a different entity then.
Yeah, we get the health care that the state negotiates, but we are not considered.
Because we're under the university umbrella. Right. Beneath the state. So we're not directly employed by the state, therefore that doesn't apply to us.
Yeah.
Although, like Nadia said, we get the health care that the statewide organization negotiates, Council 31, and part of that is involved with the SB 1229 that would prevent the strikes. Our workers for the state don't want to go on strike. They want to keep working. They provide services that people really depend on.
Well, another thing, too, your pension is statewide, too.
Right.
It's wrapped up with all the other universities. So that is a pretty strange mix of, then when you consider, like Paul Muth says quite often on News from Neptune, the show previous to ours, that the University of Illinois is only funded 12%.
By
public funds, state funds.
They throw out this, we get 31% of our funding from the state, but it's false.
Yeah. He calls it a private university.
Yeah.
Yeah, the maximum, if you actually do the math based on what percentage of the university's funding is from the state and how much they want to cut, the absolute worst case scenario that was proposed was actually only about a 5% cut for the university in funding.
And the university is still making more and more money every year, so this 5% cut isn't really a cut. It's a reduction in funding. It wouldn't affect us as much as they'd like us to believe.
Yes.
The university actually brings in over $660 million in tuition, the state only cut, 20-30 million from their budget. So there's a huge gap there of profit surplus value going into the pockets of the administration. So, and the board of trustees. So just so everybody's clear on that. They can definitely afford everything. They can afford to raise everybody's pay from their graduate assistants to AFSCME, SEIU, to non-tenure track, to tenure track faculty, as much as they want, as much tuition is coming in every year, and it's going to continue to go up. So, yeah.
Especially with some of our workers in the extension and in the child care development labs, they're making as little as $10.18 an hour, depending on the position. And that to raise a worker's pay who's that low to begin with is not that much money.
Right.
Yeah. And with the child development lab, it's ridiculous. They're pushing, the university is pushing so hard to not get them on our STEP program, which is our yearly increase to, raise our cost of living.
That's our reward for working for the university long term.
Yeah, they don't want to put them on it at all. And
Wow.
The Child Development Lab brings money in. You know, mm-hmm. this isn't like
right.
a charitable program where you can send your kids to this lab.
Do they give a reason why they don't want them involved?
They told us that they have a good reason. But they didn't tell us what it was. They didn't remember what that good reason was.
I guess we'll take them at their word.
Sure.
There's not enough money. There's never enough money. And basically that's because, you know, the top 1% of the 1% has it.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. And with all these pensions and everything else, you know, and it's got to be shaken out. It's like Tom Hartman says, he wants to go back to the pre-Reagan tax system. He wants to repeal the Reagan tax cuts. Hmm. That's back when we had a truly much more progressive federal income tax system, and that money was spread around, and it went to universities, and it went to public schools, and it was used to equalize conditions in this country. And actually, Illinois was always and still is a net loser when it comes to that, but it helped a lot of other places, and the state was richer. And I just, you know, I'm sorry, I'm going off on this thing, but it's just, I mean, that's just it.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have we do have a funding problem, but the funding problem was taken care of for most of the post-war era. It was only since 1980 when all of a sudden, I remember the 1980s, just all of a sudden, we don't have enough money to do anything anymore.
Sorry.
No, it's true. Yeah. You know, we've been talking about the situation in Greece and the austerity programs going on over there, too.
We've had austerity for 30 years in this country.
And it hasn't made us any richer at all. Any other comments from our guests here of other areas you're working to move into and stuff? And
We're working to get more stewards in the campus because we've got a really low number compared to the number of employees we have. So that's sort of part and parcel with getting the membership just more involved.
Right.
And I think that's one of Nadia's real issues. I don't think she mentioned. She's also the chief steward for Local 3700.
Oh. There you go.
So that is her project.
Yeah. We need more representation. If any 3700 people are listening who want to be stewards, give me a call.
And you'd like to have somebody in each building on campus?
Ideally.
And how many buildings did you say there were on
over
campus?
Over 250 just on campus.
Oh, there. Somebody wants to be a steward.
I was just going to say,
as long as you're asking for that on there, why don't you kind of describe what a steward would do for you?
A steward advocates for their workers. If an employee has an issue, they can bring it to their steward. Then the steward can go to management and they can try to resolve it. We always want to resolve things at the lowest level. People sort of think that a steward just comes in when there's a grievance, when there's discipline, but really, ideally, what a steward is going to do is talk to management, work out the issue before we even have to start that process.
Ideally, we are never going into any sort of formal process. We can resolve it all in the department just with as few people as possible.
Wonderful.
Okay, well, what I was wondering is, like, I think, like, the United Auto Workers at their plants or something, they have a steward, and that's, like, their full-time job.
Oh, no.
They even have, like, an office sort of a deal.
No, all of us work for the university. I mean, we do cover part-time employees as well, but I would say the majority, by far, are full-time employees with the university. Nadia and I both work full-time on campus. All of our union work is outside of that.
Yeah, see, that's basically the same way it is with the building trades, unless it's a really big project.
Right, yeah.
And then because it's so big, the steward there would have to be able to do, pretty much be a full-time job on their own.
Yeah, I know some executive boards in larger unions, also the president, that is their full-time job.
Right. But, I mean, we'll use our own personal time off, vacation time, to do some union work sometime because we do have these full-time jobs. That's not how our positions are structured, and we need to just make sure that everything gets done however we need to do it.
And I'm sure you got methods of getting your information out to the workers on campus.
Yes, and
how can, that's what something that stewards are you want stewards for,
and that's
too.
What
and
our
how
met.
Can they contact you folks? You know,
we actually have a Facebook page. If you search AFSCME 3700. And you can get our email address, and it also links to our website.
Right. It's AFSCME3700.org.
Wonderful.
It's a fairly new thing. It's a work in progress.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, we also have, like, a Twitter that's a very, very new thing, but we're hoping to, as we grow, to get more people active and interested in doing the social media with us.
And that is one thing we've also started is a communications committee,
which we just voted on
a week or two ago to start. And so if you'd like to be involved in helping to get things out there, let us know.
Well, I tell you, I belong to a union that really makes extremely little effort, especially on the local level, to communicate to us. Like we had a Facebook page, I think, but over the last election, I think there was a member being real stupid politically on there, and so they got rid of it. We had a website for a while. I don't know, it's gone. You know, I don't really understand. All I get is like some magazine every quarter from the regional bragging, you know, and every picture's got the regional manager shaking somebody's hand and giving them a trophy.
Yeah.
You folks have a newsletter as well, right?
Yes, we do have a newsletter. We just have a new issue out and we,
just this last week.
Yeah. We have our member action team people bring it around to the buildings. We each kind of have a couple buildings that we work with.
And I will be emailing it to the entire bargaining unit.
Wonderful.
Later this next week also. And
have it up on the website.
It is already on the website.
Wonderful. Yeah. With links from the Facebook page.
Right? Yep.
Yeah, wonderful.
Let's see, how many full-time people do we have? We've got two clerical staff besides the elected officials that have full-time business manager jobs. Oh, well, we can't do a Facebook page.
Yeah. we just do that when we find a moment.
How many full-time staff do you have?
None.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have a staff rep, and he works with I don't know how many locals.
I can't keep track. Yeah. We got a few more added recently. It might be about 10 now.
Yeah, so he's not just hours, but he does a lot of work for us, and we really appreciate him.
Oh, he's wonderful.
And by the way, our clerical workers are the girls.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. So we're here on the World Labor Hour. We've been talking to Ann and Nadia from Ask Me Local 3700 here on campus, and really thank you folks for coming. And,
thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
And ask you if you got any other advice or things you want to talk about?
No, we just, if people want to get involved, we really want to hear from them. If they don't want to get involved, but they just have something to say, please let us know.
Yes, we want everyone to feel like they have a voice in the union, and so please just tell us.
Great.
All right.
Well, thanks for coming. Thanks for being on the World Labor Hour. We're going to go to a quick musical break here, and then we'll be back. I know Gus has a story that he wants to kind of follow up you folks with here, so, here's a song from Jeremiah Johnson.
Jeremiah Johnson.
Yeah, that's the guy's name.
I saw that movie.
He's out of he's a blues dude out of St. Louis, so.
Wake up in the morning for the rooster even crow. Head down to the kitchen, fix you up a cup of joe. Sit down, read the paper, try to get your head away. You kiss your wife goodbye, now you're off to give it hell. Yeah, you're working for a living.
Working for a living.
You're working for a living.
Working for a living.
You call it working for a living. I call a living for the man. And if weekend can't come fast enough, yes indeed. You got a pain in your neck and arthritis in your knee. Working 10-hour days, playing 4-hour gigs. You get up in the morning and you do it all again. And you're working for a living.
Working for a living.
Yeah, you're working for a living.
Working for a living.
You call it working for a living. I call living for the man. Yeah, blues man on stage looking tight from boot to lead. He got $1,000 gifts off all $50 gigs. Give a $2 tip to give you blood, sweat, and tears. There's nothing wrong with giving all the stuff that's gotta give. Yeah, you're working for a living.
Working for a living.
You're working for a living.
Working for a living.
Call it living.
$50 gig. And a $2 tip could give you blood, sweat, and tears. There's nothing wrong with giving all, but something's gotta give. Yeah, you're working for a living.
Working for a living.
Oh, working for a living.
Working for a living.
Working for a living.
Working for a living.
Call it working for a living.
Working for a living.
Call it working for a living. I call living for the man.
All right, Jeremiah Johnson, the blues guy out of St. Louis, working for a living. And I think we're back here on the World Labor Hour. Bill's going to try and run out there and catch the phone this time. And Gus has got a story he was wanting to talk about here yet today.
So everybody's been asking questions and wanting the full update story on what's going on with Professor Stephen Salida and also with the abrupt resignation slash termination of Chancellor Phyllis, former Chancellor Phyllis Wise. So what I decided to do was drop kind of an analysis and also put it into historical context and also what it means nationally for this type of organizing on the ground level that has such a powerful impact that it changed legislation and could possibly lead to a real definition of academic freedom for professors across the country. So let's actually go into the actual story itself. A federal judge earlier this month rejected a motion by the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign for the court to dismiss Palestinian professor Stephen Salida's lawsuit charging that the university violated its contractual obligations and his free speech when it fired him for tweeting criticism of Israel's 2014 massacre in Gaza. Salida, who was a highly respected scholar of American Indian Studies, was weeks away from starting in his new position at the university last summer when Chancellor Phyllis Wise notified him, and listen to this carefully, that the administration had not presented his appointment to the Board of Trustees, so an effective firing. That's key. In reality, both administrators and trustees had caved in to the pressure in the form of a slander campaign mounted by pro-Israel apartheid individuals and organizations, including major donors to the university. Among the university faculty and students, meanwhile, there was strong support, overwhelming support for Stephen Salida, with at least 16 departments, including the American Indian Studies program, where Salida was supposed to teach, voting no confidence in Chancellor Wise. The recent federal ruling now allows Salida's suit seeking reinstatement of his position to go forward. In the aftermath of the court decision, former Chancellor Wise was terminated from her position at the university. This sudden reversal of fortune has unraveled the university's attempts to silence Stephen Salida while casting a harsh spotlight on administrators and board of trustees who caved to pro-Israel apartheid lobbyists in firing Salida and then scrambled to cover their tracks with emails that have now also been made public. As a result, Chancellor Wise now finds herself with a disgraced ex-chancellor demoted to the faculty. Her record as chancellor is marred by exploitative practices that viciously attack the power of the tenured and non-tenured track faculty, racist practices that drastically reduce the African-American student population on the campus every year and facilitated campus police harassment of people of color, de facto laws that attempted to sever any and all ties to the Champaign-Urbana community, and increased segregation between the two areas, and a continuous onslaught against the graduate student population by attempting to seize tuition waivers, decrease health care, skyrocket tuition, and refuse to bargain labor contracts in good faith. That being said, one could argue that the Chancellor Wise era at the University of Illinois could be considered the nadir period of the school, or the lowest point for all oppressed groups, and we welcome this opportunity now to build a hopefully progressive relationship with the new interim chancellor, Barbara Wilson. Now, that being said, what does this mean in terms of the legal standpoint? What does all this organizing from the students and the professors mean for what happened in the courtroom? As the Center for the Constitutional Rights, which filed the lawsuit for Stephen Salida, reported, the federal judge, Harry Lienenweber,
firmly rejected the university's claim that it did not have a contract with Professor Salida, stating, I quote, if the court accepted the university's argument, the entire American academic hiring process as it now operates would cease to exist. The court further rejected the university's attempt to dismiss Professor Salida's First Amendment claims, finding that his tweets implicate every central concern of the First Amendment. So what happened was Lehman Weber's decision followed a June ruling by an Illinois court that the university had to disclose hundreds of emails relevant to the Salida firing, and as well as a former censure of the university by the American Association of University Professors. Some of the emails released reveal Wise consulting with select faculty members about Salida's termination, though none in the Department of American Indian Studies where he was hired, and possibly attempts to destroy email evidence that might be used in court because of the lawsuit. So things are going to get very dicey. Now, implications both from a local and national and historical context. First, Salida's lawsuit seeking reinstatement of his position and monetary relief for economic suffering and damage to his reputation can now go forward and may result in victories on both claims. The rulings also mean that Salida's attorneys will have full access to administration emails to help prepare their case. That's going to be huge. So all the stuff that we've been reading about, it could get nastier and nastier.
Yeah.
Second, the court rulings affirm that Salida's claim for violation of his academic freedom and free speech merit a legal hearing. Thus, they are a victory for academics and workers everywhere. As Salida himself put in a statement, given the serious ramifications of my termination from a tenured professorship to a wide range of people, I am happy to move forward with this suit in the hope that restrictions on academic freedom, free speech, and shared governance will not become further entrenched because of UIUC's behavior. Third, the court decision will serve as a warning to the university administration that trashing faculty rights and free speech while caving in to pro-Israeli apartheid lobbyists may come at a cost. As Ali Abu, Abu Nima, an author and prominent Palestinian rights activist, wrote at Electronic Intifada, many in academia may look at him and what is happening to Phyllis Wise and decide that the growing cost of prostrating oneself before intolerant authoritarian pro-Israeli groups and donors is not a price worth paying. So, for another big thing that's coming on that's huge. In Salida's case, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, which claims to monitor anti-Semitism, sent a letter to UIUC President Robert Easter protesting the appointment of, quote, a professor who would liken Israel, the only democracy in the Middle East, to a radical extremist group who crucified civilians and then posted videos like trophies on YouTube. The Salida federal court rulings are part of a string of victories against these so-called intimidation tactics. Since 2013, and this is going into the national context, a wave of academic professional organizations, including most recently the National Association of Chicana and Chicano Studies this past April, have passed new resolutions supporting a boycott of Israeli universities. These actions come in the face of attempts at the state and federal levels to punish academics who engage in boycott activities. But here's what's key, y'all. This is what was the central focus and why the Stephen Salida case may be a victory for all. Last fall's boycott by the university of 5,000 academics, students, professors, laborers, community members in support of Stephen Salida after his firing was a watershed for pro-Palestinian support and also pro-freedom speech and anti-exploitative practices at the university. The mass protests represented a tipping point in consciousness among faculty about both the brutality of Israeli occupation of Palestine and the targeting of Palestinian scholars, and just in general, an abuse of power by the administration, which is systemic in Illinois, University of Illinois' history. This support for Salida can't be separated from the growing national and international backing for the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign against Israel, including the willingness of university students to become active around the cause. The historic vote last December in support of the boycott of Israel by UAW Local 2865, the Union for University of California Graduate Student Employees, is part of a widening campaign of Palestinian solidarity and has also embraced Salida in his fight against the university. So the big thing that we're getting from this is that all the organizing, all the boycotts, all of the national fervor around an incident of an abuse of power and exploitation at the hands of the administration led to one of the most significant and could be one of the most groundbreaking decisions in history in terms of academic freedom. This could really turn into something that the history books need to know about if we win this case, because it all came from the ground
up. All the organizers from all the great people that pressured the courts, that pressured the administration to do these things. This is where we are right now. And I think that we're looking at a victory if we continue to sustain the fight.
Excellent. We wanted to open up the phone lines here real quick and see if a few people wanted to get a few thoughts in here. So you can give us a call at 359-5483 or 359-6545. And Bill's got some comments.
Well, just real quickly, the thing that was really sticking out in my ears was the amounts of money involved for her compensation
right.
in various ways. You know, the $400,000 bonus for creating this mess.
Yeah. The use of private emails. We all know that's not right.
For some reason in this country, when you do things that are ridiculously illegal, you get off with bailouts and bonus money. I mean, let's go back to the Great Recession.
Parachutes.
All those bankers bailouts, we're talking $3-4 million, probably more, for doing illegal things. In this country, it's the most, that's how it works, apparently. If you're going to commit a crime, it has to be something most ridiculous that it cripples an institution or the country itself, and you'll get millions of dollars in support.
Well, to quote the title of an old movie, musical about a labor union, a dock workers union, never steal anything small.
Yes.
Starring James Cagney, by the way.
There you go.
You can get it on Amazon on VHS still for some like $50.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think I'm going to order it, man. There might be some pretty funny stuff on there. Yeah, no, really, folks, it is. It was a musical made in the 1950s about a corrupt longshore workers union starring James Cagney, and it was titled Never Steal Anything Small.
Bill, did you have an announcement you wanted to mention earlier about Piatt County?
Yeah, by the way, there's all this big kerfluffle about Bernie Sanders, and I have to find this here. Here's the tab. And if you're in Piatt County on September 2nd at 7 p.m., you can join the Piatt County Democrats at the Hardee's in Monticello. And the easiest way to tell you how to get there is if you take either exit off of 72, it will take you straight to Hardee's. And there will be they will be hosting Deborah Schrissen, co-chapter leader, Central Illinois Progressive Democrats of America, and she's also a national staffer for the organization, and she's going to tell people why the PDA is supporting the Sanders campaign for president in 2016, and that will be September 2nd at the Hardee's in Monticello at 7 p.m. There will be T-shirts and other stuff to purchase. So that's for people to get more informed about Bernie Sanders.
Oh, wonderful. We should mention that locally happening here in town this weekend, Friday and Saturday, this Champaign Park District is having the Taste of Champaign Urbana. There's some plenty of good eats out there. There's some decent music. They've got some jazz going on today, some electric rock and alternative rock later on, the Decadents. And I guess the headliners tonight are the Gin Blossoms, Grammy-nominated and nationally recognized pop rock band. Mm-hmm. And I should mention briefly that there's a WEFT fundraiser coming up on August 31st at 7 p.m. David Gans, host of the syndicated Grateful Dead Hour, is going to be in town playing at the Iron Post. The show opens at 7 with Gaia Tonic, and David Gans comes on at 8:15. There's a $10 cover charge. But that is a fundraiser for WEFT, and I guess that would be kind of the kickoff to our pledge drive, which begins September 1st. And then after that, WEFFest, well, during the pledge drive, WEFFest is happening September 13th at Mike and Molly's Beer Garden. There'll be some good music over there next door, so all kinds of great events coming up here around Champaign, Urbana.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
So we don't have a table at the Taste of Champaign this year?
Not this year.
Okay. Community corridor, and I also do not see any labor organizations presenting at Taste of Champaign.
Well, the Labor Day Parade is coming up, and I know that some of these organizations are going to be out there. Is Ask Me 3700 going to be out there at the Labor Day Parade?
Yeah, we are. We're hoping to do a small float this year with our brothers and sisters in 698.
There is also a picnic following the parade. I believe it's Prairie Park.
Prairie Park over there with the softball games go on and stuff like that.
And
they usually have some good music out there.
Yep.
And a raffle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they usually have some free hot dogs and lemonade and Pepsi.
Well, yes. Free food for the community.
It's all provided by the local unions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good time out there at Prairie Park. I've been out there several times over the past few years. So that's a good Labor Day picnic celebration.
Right, that's still starting at Lincoln Square or,
I believe
it. The parade will start at Lincoln Square and then go down to Washington and over to Prairie Park.
Okay. I'd like to say too that one of the people who was instrumental in organizing this was somebody who actually was a couple of years ahead of me in school in BMet. For a time, that she moved, their family moved from town and, she was in a communication workers local.
Ah, the CWA or what?
Yeah, and I can't remember what she does.
That's another one. They're getting locked out on the East Coast, Bell South and whatnot, and Verizon are playing games with the unions out there on the East Coast. I think that they got some of those people locked out right now as they're kind of negotiating contracts and stuff. So CWA is fighting for the workers out there. So any other comments?
Let me see. Paul Muth says, Spooks via Facebook, Spooks subsidize sweatshop retail. Amazon last quarter's profit did not accrue from its sweatshop retail biz, rather from its cloud sales. A big portion is CIA money.
Yeah. Yeah, they got the Amazon cloud servers and stuff, and they make some money on that. And it's been noted for years that they have a big contract with the CIA.
They're going to see a big increase in the drone program, too, and the drone delivery service.
So I did want to say one thing. Parallel to the Taste of Champagne is the Craft Beer Festival, and with that, my stepfather-in-law, Mark Hartstein, is running a hot dog stand, Chicago-style hot dog stand today, called Shady Dogs.
Wonderful. And that's happening in downtown Champaign?
Right now, yep.
Yeah, rather than Taste to See You is in Westside Park.
Yep, it's parallel event.
Yeah, yeah. Craft beer. There are some craft beers out at the Taste to See You, but I think the better selection is here in downtown Champaign. So.
I'm sure.
Most likely.
So that's another good reason to get out there. It's beautiful weather out there today, folks, so get out there and have some fun.
Here's another one, though. I just remembered. We started out with the Labor Day parade was in Westside Park, but the big hassle was you couldn't have beer there, and so we had to deal with the Legion that's close by.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now you can have beer there, so could we come back? But,
maybe.
But they don't have softball diamonds. I forgot.
That's
they
true.
You have to have the softball tournament. Yeah.
Gus, any closing comments or words over there?
No, that's it. Everybody out and, enjoy this nice weather. You know, I know next week too, I think it's Sweet Corn Festival next week.
Yeah, I think.
Like I said,
downtown Urbana.
Like,
yeah.
Something like every weekend now that, the fall is kicking up. So, yeah.
Well, as David Johnson says, be safe and power to the people. Mm-hmm. We're going to listen to a little bit of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings doing, Why Don't We All Stop Paying Taxes? And then we're going to join, The Union Edge, hosted by Charles Showalter, already in progress. So, thanks again for listening.